Genesis chapter 11, please. Genesis chapter 11. You're just going to be reading from the end of the chapter. Knew there was something wrong. I didn't have my glasses on. I want to read, first of all, from 2 Peter 2, but you needn't turn to it, because we're going to be spending our time in Genesis. 2 Peter 2, verses 6 to 9. "And turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overflow, making them an ensample unto those that should after live ungodly, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked, for that righteous man, dwelling among them, in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished." That's 2 Peter 2, 6 to 9. Now, the last two verses of Genesis 11 and verse 1 of chapter 12. "And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot the son of Haran, his son's son, and Sarai his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went forth with them from Ur of the Chaldees to go into the land of Canaan. And they came unto Haran and dwelt there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran." Now verse 1. "Now the Lord had said unto Abram," you'll notice the words "had said," which indicates that it wasn't at this time he said it, but actually while he was still in Ur of the Chaldees. "Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee." Now down, please, to verse 4. "So Abram departed, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son, and all their substance that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan, and into the land of Canaan they came. And Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sychem, unto the plain of Mori, and the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord, which appeared unto him. And he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west, and Hai on the east. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south, toward Negev. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down unto Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land." Now chapter 13, please, verse 1. "And Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him unto the south. And Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, and to the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord." Verse 7, please. "And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou wilt depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves one from another. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Now, we'll skip over, please, to chapter 19. Verse 1. And there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. And Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and he said, Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house, and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and ye shall rise up early and go on your ways. And they said, Nay, but we will abide in the street all night. Verse 9, please. And they said, Stand back. And they said again, This one fellow came in to sojourn, and he will needs be a judge. Now will we deal worse with thee than with them. And they pressed sore upon the man, even Lot, and came near to break the door. Now down to verse 15. And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, Arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. And while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. Verse 26. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. Finally, verse 30. And Lot went up out of Zoar, and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him. For he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. That's all I'm going to read. I'm sorry that it had to be broken up like that. I just hope you're familiar with the passages that we were reading together. But time is of the essence, as they say, and so I'm limiting it to that. I have titled this topic this morning as The Tragedy of Lot. The Tragedy of Lot. Lot was the man whose soul was saved, but whose life was lost. His soul was saved, but his life was lost. Now I've divided Lot's life into three sections. First of all, we have Lot, the tent dweller. Secondly, we have Lot, the house dweller. And finally, we have Lot, the cave dweller, Lot, the tent dweller, Lot, the house dweller, and Lot, the cave dweller. Now, you will notice that we read from chapter 11 that Terah took Abram his son, and so on. Now, we learn from chapter 12 and verse 1 that Terah wasn't actually called to go out. God had spoken to Abraham while he was still in Ur of the Chaldees and had told him to separate himself from his kindred and from his tribe and from his people and so on, and to go into a land that God would tell him of. But Terah was Abram's father. And I guess when Terah heard that God had called Abram, Terah took the initiative because he was the senior person. So he decided that he was going to go, and Lot was going to go too. And so they went forth to go into the land of Canaan. But we read that they came to Haran. And when they came to Haran, it says that they dwelt there. So there was a delay in Abram going into the land. And then verse 32 says, the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. I take it that had Terah lived longer, they would have dwelt in Haran longer, because God had not called Terah. Terah was not intended to go into the land. It was a call to Abram. And so they stayed in Haran until Terah had died. So the old man had to die first. Then they could go into the land. But when we come into chapter 12, we read that not only did Abram go into the land, and Sarah, his wife, of course, but it says in verse 4, so Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. So Lot went as well. Now, that may be questionable in some people's minds as to whether Lot was ever intended to go. But unlike Terah, Lot survived the period in Haran. So I would take it from that that God had a separate program for Lot. I'm not saying that he had had a special revelation from God as Abram had, but obviously God had purposes for Lot. And when we come to 2 Peter chapter 2, there are three things that are said about him. First of all, it says in verse 7 that God delivered just Lot. Now that doesn't mean only Lot. It's righteous Lot. So God describes him as a righteous person. Verse 8 says, for that righteous man dwelling among them. So he is described as a righteous man. Then verse 9 says, the Lord knoweth how to deliver the godly out of temptation. So he's described as being a righteous man and being a godly man. So I would take it from that that God did have a purpose for the life of Lot. God had intentions for Lot. He never saw those intentions absolutely fulfilled, but he did have purposes for the life of Lot. I would take it, if we were to use New Testament language, that we could speak of Lot as being a saved man. So when we come into this first section, we see Lot, the tent dweller. We have, first of all, in verse 1, their entrance into the land. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, into the land which I will show thee. Verse 4 adds, so Abram departed, that is from Haran, as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him, and Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So they entered upon the land that God had intended for Abram. Okay? So I want you to notice things that characterize their dwelling in the land. Notice verse 8 says, no, verse 7. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, unto thy seed will I give this land. And there builded he an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. And he removed him from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the east, Bethel on the west, and Hai on the east. And there he builded an altar unto the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. These were two things that characterized the life of Abram. And inasmuch as at this period of time, Lot was dwelling with Abram, it was part of Lot's life too. An altar and a tent. The altar was a permanent thing. Once that altar was built, you, if you lived in those days, could have gone back there 100 years later. And very likely that altar would still be there. It was built out of stone. So what was for God was permanent. But what Abram dwelt in was temporary. It was a tent. I've used this illustration before, but I remember the first time I had tent meetings in Kamloops. I had 4 weeks down in Brocklehurst, and then 2 weeks at Oak Hills, and then I had a further 2 weeks just up the road here. Some of you will remember that site. And when I first went to that site to look at it, the grass was, about yay high. It was really high. So I had to get a special mower in order to mow the grass down. And there was all sorts of garbage in and amongst it. But we managed to get all the garbage out of the way and clear the ground. And then eventually, of course, we pitched the tent and we had the meetings. When we took the tent down, you could see the track that people had taken from the road to where the tent was. And you could see to where the people had sat in the various rows, because they kept on, by their walking along, they kept on keeping the grass level low. But 2 weeks later, you could have gone there and you would never know that the tent had ever been there. So what was for Abraham and for Lot was temporary. But what was for God was permanent. You'll notice that we read in verse 7 that he builded an altar. And not until we come to verse 8 did he pitch his tent. So God came first in his life. And if that was true of Abraham, I would take it that that was true of Lot too. Now I want to make that application to us. Can we remember a time in our life when we first came to know Christ as Savior, and the sky above was brighter blue, and earth around was sweeter green? Everything seemed so wonderful to us. And we seem to be going on for quite a while and really doing well in our Christian experience. And maybe we were putting God first in our life. Can you remember that? Have you had that experience? But as time has gone by, has that become dim? Is that just something from your distant past? Well, that's the way the early part of Lot's life was, as far as dwelling in the land is concerned. Now, I want us to notice, please, that it says in verse 9 of chapter 12, "And Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south." That word for south is Negev. And if you know anything about the land of Israel, you'll know that there is the desert in the south of Israel, and to this day, it is known as the Negev. The word actually has the idea of something that is parched, because it was desert land. It was very, very dry. But the point I want to draw to our attention is that it bordered on Israel. It bordered on Egypt. Abraham was not content with where he had been when he came to Bethel, where he pitched his tent and built his altar, he went down into the south country. And you'll notice it says there, in verse 9, Abram journeyed south, journeyed going on still toward the south, and there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. Now, Abraham wasn't on his own. His wife was with him, of course. But we discover, too, that so was Lot. Because it says in chapter 13 and verse 1, Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south country, the Negev. So Lot went with Abram when he went down into Egypt. Now I want you to notice that as far as Abraham is concerned, the very first thing that happened was compromise on the part of Abraham. He put his own life before his wife's life. I won't go into the details of it. But he was more concerned about his safety than the purity of his wife. The other two things I want us to notice is this, that while he was down in Egypt, there was no altar and there was no tent. What does Egypt speak to us of? Well, I take it that Egypt would speak to us of the world of pleasure and the world of treasure. We get that when we come to Hebrews chapter 11. It's the world of pleasure and the world of treasure. It was as modern as any country in the world was at that point in time. And Abraham was infatuated with Egypt, and he compromised his life as a result. Now, without going into the details of what happened, we find when we come into chapter 13, Abraham went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. Now, notice please verse 4. Well, we'll read from verse 3. And he went on his journeys from Negev unto Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Ai, or Ai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the Lord. So they came up out of Egypt. That was a blot on Abram's character, that period of time that he spent in Egypt. And it was a time of dearth as far as Abram's life is concerned. But not only as far as Abram is concerned, but as far as Lot is concerned too. You and I need to realize this, that every single one of us, without exception, every single one of us is an influence on the lives of others. Do you remember in John chapter 21, when Peter became impatient because the Lord hadn't appeared to them, Peter said, I'm going fishing. I would take it that he was going back to fishing as a livelihood. And a number of the others said, we're going with you. So not only did Peter get away from the path that the Lord had in mind for him, but he took others along with him. I could give you lots of examples from the scriptures of people who went astray, and as a result, they drew others away too. And while in the case of these various individuals, some of them were recovered, those whose lives they influenced were not necessarily recovered. Now I want us to see that in relation to Abraham and Lot. When Abraham left Egypt, he left Egypt behind. Do you get that? When he left Egypt, he left Egypt behind. And maybe in your Christian experience, if you have an Egypt in your life, maybe you will know deliverance from it. But just remember, your life is an influence on other people. And while you may be delivered, that is no guarantee that those that you influence will be delivered as well. Okay? That is so important. I'm thinking now of a man who was in assembly fellowship, he and his wife, and he got away from God. I don't know how old he was at the time, but in his old age, he got restored to the Lord, and he was back in assembly fellowship. But you know what? In the meanwhile, he had lost his family. He was married, raised a family, but they were nowhere spiritually. Because in their formative years, he was away from God. And that happens so often. Well, Abram was a tremendous influence upon Lot. And while Abram left Egypt behind him, Lot brought Egypt in his heart. Let's go down, please. And let's look, please. We look first of all at verse 7. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwell then in the land. Things were different now. Different from the way they had been before they had gone into Egypt. There wasn't that fellowship between Abram and Lot that there had been in the past. After all, Abraham had been recovered from his time down in Egypt, but Lot hadn't. He still had Egypt in his heart. Now, I'll prove that to you. Come with me again to verse 7. I want to mention one other thing. And there was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. Then we read something that may on the surface seem strange and out of place. It says, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwell then in the land. Why would it say that? Because it doesn't go on to speak about them. It just makes this single statement about them. I think what it's implying to you and me is this, that when we have problems between one another, there's a world out there that's looking on. And they're looking for us to make blunders in our lives. The Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelt then in the land. Okay. So Abram gave the choice to Lot. He said, if you go to the right hand, I'll go to the left. If you go to the left hand, I'll go to the right. So he left it for Lot to make his choice as to where he was going to dwell. Now that seems on the surface of it to be very nice on the part of Abraham. And I don't doubt that he had Lot's best interests at heart in doing so. But I want you to notice the effect it was upon Lot. Verse 10. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord. Now look at this. Like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. How did he know that it was like the land of Egypt?
If he had never been down in Egypt, he never would have known what Egypt was like. So he viewed this area as being like the land of Egypt. Egypt was a place of pleasure. Egypt was a place of treasure. There was a lot to be gained in Egypt. And that's how he viewed the land of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Now notice how it goes on. Verse 12. Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom.
So he's still living in his tent. He's still somewhat of a sojourner at this point. But he set his sights on Sodom. You see, all he could see was it was like Egypt. It was a place where there was a great deal of pleasure to be had and a great deal of treasure to be gained. But notice what the next verse says. Verse 13. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Lot didn't see Sodom as God saw Sodom. Lot saw Sodom as being like Egypt, a place of pleasure and a place of treasure. God saw it as a place of exceeding wickedness. Oh, that you and I might have a clear perspective as far as this world is concerned. That we might realize that the world outside here is a very wicked place. You know, even over the last few years, there has been a tremendous deterioration of standards as far as this world is concerned. Things that were once illegal and were shunned now have become legal. And not only have become legal, but you find that even the media are actually pushing these things on us. We're supposed to treat these people that are different, who have a different lifestyle, as being perfectly normal. It's even being propagated in a lot of schools that this is normal, but it's not normal. It's abnormal. But that's the world that we're living in. And things are becoming more and more wicked as time goes on. So he pitched his tent towards Sodom. Now I want you to notice, please, when we come down to chapter 19, I'm sure you'll remember the story of chapter 18 when the three men came to the tent of Abram, and it turns out that one of the three men was the Lord himself. I would take it, it would be the Lord Jesus himself. He was the revelation of God. He has always been the one through whom God has revealed himself. So every theocracy, theocracy is also a Christocracy. God has always revealed himself in Christ. So, one of them turned out to be the Lord, and the two others, it turns out, were angels. And when the two went into the city, the Lord stayed with Abram, and Abraham made his appeal as far as Sodom and Gomorrah is concerned. Abraham wasn't so much concerned about the welfare of the cities. He was concerned about his nephew Lot, who was dwelling in Sodom. And so he was appealing for the city on the behalf of his estranged nephew.
who was dwelling in Sodom. Now, I want you to notice, please, here in chapter 19, it says, there came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. I want you to notice that expression. That does not mean that he just happened to be sitting there at the time. It's a technical term. It appears in other places in the Old Testament as well. The idea of sitting in the gate of the city is that's where the judges sat to judge all the issues that would come up between individuals. It was the gate of the city. That's where the judges sat. And so Lot placed himself amongst the judges. Notice in that connection, please, down at verse 9 it says, and they said, stand back. And they said again, this one fellow came in to sojourn. So they recognized that when he first came, he was a tent dweller. But it says, and he must needs be a judge. In other words, he had taken the position of being a judge in the city. Now, I would take it from what I read in 2 Peter chapter 2, that he was actually very disturbed by the immorality that he saw in the city. You know, when he was still on the outskirts of the city, he couldn't see what was going on inside the city. But once he moved inside the city, he discovered that everything in that world was altogether different from what he thought. Rather than it being a place where there would be a lot of pleasure and a lot of material gain for him, it was actually a place of gross immorality. You know, if you think conditions are bad in our day, things were much worse in Sodom in those days. I won't go into the details of the kinds of sins that were going on in the city, but it was a very, very immoral place. And the sins that were being practiced were very unnatural sins. You can read into that what you like. And so he was taking the place of a judge. What he was wanting to do was to change things in Sodom. He was hoping that by his involvement in the politics of the city, that he was going to change everything. That people would have a fresh start in life and they would get away from their immorality and so on. But it was not to be so. Then I want you to notice too, in verse 2 it says, and he said, that is to these angels, behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into thy servant's house. So now he wasn't a tent dweller anymore. He was dwelling in a house. Now I'm not saying that we as Christians should be living in tents. That would be perfectly all right in some parts of the world. But it wouldn't do where we live, certainly not in the winter. But the principle is this. The tent dweller was a sojourner, someone who was just passing through. He didn't belong in the country where he was. We read about Abraham, for example, that although God had promised the land to him, God didn't give him even a foot of property in that land. He passed through it as though he was a stranger. You see, God's promise to Abraham waits a future fulfillment when Abraham will come into possession of that land. In the meanwhile, he was a pilgrim and a stranger. But now Lot's left that lifestyle behind. And he's become a house dweller. In other words, he fitted in. Not morally, but as far as other parts of lifestyle is concerned, he had become one like one of them.
Now, who was at fault here? Well, obviously was at fault. It should never have happened in his life. But that doesn't take responsibility off Abraham. If Abraham had never taken him down into Egypt, perhaps this never would have happened in Lot's life. But Lot's lifestyle had changed drastically from what it had once been. He was living in Sodom as though that's all there was, that there was no future for him to think about. He didn't have to think about the land one day becoming the property of his uncle and of them all by extension. Okay. And so we find that he seeks to make a change. But what I notice when we come to verse 9 is this. Although he had set himself up as one of the judges, and no doubt had been accepted as being one of the judges, when it really came to it, he was no influence at all. There was no change in the lifestyle of the people of Sodom because of Lot sitting in the gate. They weren't a bit interested in Lot's theology, if you like, Lot's standards of living. They were going to live as they were going to live. Okay? So, now he has become the house dweller. Okay. I want us to think now of Lot's deliverance. Verses 15 and 16 of chapter 19. And when the morning arose, oh, by the way, before we get there, I want you to notice that even his own sons-in-law were not influenced by him. He was as one that mocked to his sons-in-law. They weren't a bit interested in a change of lifestyle. So, verse 15, and when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, arise, take thy wife and thy two daughters, which are here, lest thou be consumed in the iniquity of the city. Now notice what it says in verse 16. This is hard to believe. And while he lingered, this city was just about to be destroyed. And rather than being in a hurry to get out of it, he lingered. Why did he linger? Well, because there was that about Sodom that he still loved. He loved the comfort. He loved the financial prosperity that went along with living there. Even though he was sorely grieved at the immorality that he saw all around about him, I guess in his way of thinking, it was compensated by the comfort and prosperity that he was experiencing. So he lingered. While he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and upon the hand of his two daughters, the Lord being merciful unto him. And they brought them forth and set him without the city. Okay. Verse 17. And it came to pass, when they had brought them forth abroad, that he, one of the angels, said, escape for thy life. Look not behind thee, neither stay thou in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest thou be consumed. And Lot said unto them, oh, not so, my lord. Behold, now thy servant hath found grace in thy sight, and thou hast magnified thy mercy which thou hast showed unto me in saving my life. And I cannot escape to the mountain, lest some evil take me and I die. Behold, now this city is near to flee unto, and is it not a little one? Oh, let me escape thither. Is it not a little one? And my soul shall live. So he still was not in a hurry to get away. Now come with me, please, to verse 26. But his wife looked back from behind him, and she became a pillar of salt. He'd lost everything. He'd left his house behind, all his prosperity behind. Now he's out of the city, he's got nothing. And now he's about to lose his wife. Oh, by the way, can anyone tell me what her name was? What was the name of Lot's wife? Do you know we're not told anywhere in the Bible what her name was? I would take it the reason for that is because her name was not written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Do you know, we don't read anything about Lot's wife until he moved into Sodom. So I would take it that that's where he found her. That's where she was born. That was the only lifestyle she'd ever known. And so it says here, his wife looked back from behind him. If you check with the Strong's Concordance, those words looked back have the idea of looking back desiringly. You see, this was the only lifestyle she'd ever known. And that's all she wanted. She didn't want to leave Sodom. She wanted to go back into Sodom. And so God, in effect, said, if that's what you want, you can have the judgment that's falling upon the city. She became a pillar of salt. So he lost his wife. Now, we've got to bring it to an end. Come with me to verse 30. There is so much more that could be said. But it says in verse 30, and Lot went up out of Zoar and dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar. So he didn't dwell in the little city. He was in constant fear for his life. It says, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. That's where he ended his life. Lot, the cave dweller. He lost his wife. He lost his dignity. He lost his testimony. He lost everything that he held dear to him. His wife lost her life, and his daughters lost their purity. So he ended his life in a cave. God had great purposes for the life of Lot. Of course, God knew what would happen. But nonetheless, God's purposes for Lot were great purposes. But Lot ended his life tragically. Now that can happen to you and me, even in old age. You know, Paul, when he was an old man, said in 1 Corinthians, lest after I have preached to others, I myself should be disqualified. He recognized that even in his old age, he was still open to temptation. We'll never be out of danger until we're out of this world. So in the meanwhile, I just would encourage every one of us who claims to be a believer in the Lord Jesus to really put the Lord first. Remember, the first thing that Abraham did was to build an altar, a permanent witness to the God of Abraham. God came first, and then he pitched his tent. He recognized that this world was not his home, He was going on to better things. Oh, that God would help each one of us to do the same.